Welcome to Porch Stories on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Sarah Hegland. Every month, we invite residents of Central Iowa for a potluck and neighborly conversational storytelling. As we sit around the table and tell each other stories of our lives, we pass around the recording microphone so we can share them with you on the radio. So sit back, enjoy something to drink, and imagine you have joined us.
The theme of this evening's three stories is May Old Acquaintance Not Be Forgot. Listen to the laughter and the joy of conversational storytelling. We are your neighbors.
My name's Randy Peters. About 32 years ago, we lived in Dubuque, Iowa. My husband managed a Five Flags theater there, and they would get people in, entertainment and stuff. And one day he called me up at home and said, quick, get down here. There's somebody I want you to see. Ran down there. I'm thinking it's somebody from college I haven't seen for a long time. So I have my best bib overalls and T-shirt on, and I go downtown, and it was George Burns. And he was in Mercy Hospital, brought him in for a fundraiser. I had the opportunity to meet him. Well, as it turned out, it was getting to be about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. All the important people from Mercy Hospital that were supposed to get together with him for lunch had to go back to work. And Steve was tied up at the theater, and it ended up to be myself. I got to go with George, and then George's manager, and some roadie, and then Chris, who was a secretary there at the theater, who was about 19. It's interesting. This is right after Oh God came out, the first
one. Oh, wow.
So he was exactly like that character. But it was so funny because as we're walking down the street, you'd see drunks coming out of bars, George, about, you know, falling over the curb and everything. And he would just say hi, you know, and he was very cordial to everyone. And we got to the hotel where they were staying, and his manager asked him if they could get something to eat. And they said, well, we just closed the kitchen. And his manager said, listen, you know, he's got to perform tonight. He just wants soup or sandwich. Can you just, you know, heat up a can of soup or something? So they said, yeah, fine. They don't. A lot of the people there didn't even know who he was. So the five of us go down to the restaurant in the lower level. It was pretty much empty. We're sitting around. I only have like less than $2 in my purse because I didn't know I was doing this lunch thing. But I order Coke and everybody else is ordering actual meals. And meanwhile, he's sitting there. I'm just talking to George Burns, and just like you would your grandfather or something. Meanwhile, there's this kid behind us busting the table, and he's got, you know, the big plastic tub that they're taking the dishes off with, and he slams it into the back of George Burns' chair, and Burns goes, and I thought, oh my God, he's going to die before tonight's performance, you know. But then he kind of caught his breath, and the kid obviously didn't know who he was. He left. So we're waiting for our order, and as we're talking, George starts to get a cigar out, and his manager stops him and says, now how many are you going to have in the act tonight? You know, just wait. I mean, I didn't realize he was being monitored on how much he could smoke, so he just kind of waited till afterwards. I thought that was interesting. And so I'm trying to sit there thinking, you know, what do I say to him? And I didn't want to act really stupid or anything. And so his wife, Gracie, had died earlier, you know, years earlier. But I remembered he had a son, Ronnie, on his show. So I asked him about his son, Ronnie, and he said, oh, yeah, he was had a marina or something now in California. He says, I also have a daughter, too, but she never wanted to be on the show. And then he mentioned that both of his children were adopted. And so then I said, well, I have four kids, three of them who were from Korea. So then we talked about adoption and being parents and all that. And then he asked me if I knew John Denver. And I said, well, I know who he is. I don't know him. And he said John Denver had two children from Japan that he adopted. And so then he gets off on a sidetrack about John Denver, and it was Mother's Day had been, a few months before, and how John Denver had surprised his mother on Mother's Day by attending her church without her knowing, and worked out this thing with the pastor that when it was time for music, he went up and sang, and sang to her, and of course the whole congregation was all weeping, and George kept going, that kid is really a good guy, you know, he was going on about him, and you know, you would have thought it was his own son. It was really interesting. So you're hearing the personal side about parenting and kids and all this stuff. And then when the order finally came to the table, everybody's got their food, and I have my Coke, and he looks at me and he says, aren't you ordering anything? I said, no, I'm fine. He says, well, I'm not going to eat this if you don't need something. So he split a sandwich with me, and I thought, well, you know, how often do you get to split a sandwich with George Burns? That was kind of neat, you know. And then it was time to leave. But, you know, it was really interesting because he was just the family guy kind of thing. He was exactly like the old guy character in the movie. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what I was going to expect. But then he started, you know, when he started telling little anecdotes about his family and about John Denver's and mm-hmm. wanting to know about mine, it was just, he was just a neat guy.
It's so wonderful to be with you again, George. Well, George, do a song with us. Do the song from your album, I Wish I Was 18 Again.
But John, to be able to do that, I've got to have backup singers.
Well, George, I've got a great group of singers, right? I'd be happy to sing backup for you.
John, you're too expensive.
I consider you a friend, George. A dollar.
John, you're too expensive.
It's on the house.
Okay, I'll pay a dollar.
All right.
Okay. At a bar down in Dallas, an old man chimed in. And I thought he was out of his head. Just being a young man, I just laughed it off when I heard what that old man had said. He said, I'll never again turn the young ladies' heads. Go running off into the wind. I'm three quarters home from the start to the end, and I wish I was 18 again. I wish I was 18.
My name is Sarah Hegland. This story takes place in Saigon 2 years ago. I was in Vietnam for about a month. And I was traveling with a friend, but she stayed up in Hanoi. And I went down to Saigon by myself. So I was walking along the waterfront. This woman comes up to me, and she's kind of older looking Asian woman. And she starts talking to me. And her English is pretty good. We're talking about, you know, life in Vietnam, and it's really lovely. And so we talk for about half an hour, and then she says, why don't you come home and meet my family? And I said, great. You know, it'll be like a, you know, authentic sort of Vietnamese family experience. So I go home with her. And she lives farther out than what I thought. I thought it would kind of be in the center of the city, and it was like maybe half an hour by taxi. And we get there, and we go into her living room, and it's kind of like a condo type place. And she introduces me to her nephew. Her nephew comes downstairs. Her nephew's maybe 25 or so. And then the woman disappears. She goes back into the kitchen and she says, I'm just going to make some tea and pot stickers and things. So the nephew starts talking to me. And we talk for maybe like 20 minutes. And it's really weird that the woman isn't there at all. But the nephew starts talking about his job. And he works on casino boats. He travels all over the world and he's like a blackjack dealer. So he says, I'll show you how to cheat in blackjack. And I was like, okay, that sounds fun. So he shows me a couple of things, and I was like, cool, you know. And, I've been taught blackjack before, but I've never really played professionally. So I was kind of, you know, looking back on it. There were a lot of things that were starting to add up that were a little bit weird. But you just ignore them because you're like, I'm a guest in somebody's home. You know, like, they're being hospitable. They're bringing me pot stickers, you know. But the fact that cheating in a professional blackjack game was so supposedly easy should have been a clue. But, you know, I was like, whatever, this is fun. I'm cheating in blackjack. And then he starts telling me this really secretive story. And he says, you know, last night there was a wealthy woman who came to my boat and she cheated me. She won a lot of money. This rich older woman, she won a lot of money and she didn't give me a tip at all. And he said, she's coming here tonight and I want to try to win, get money back from her. And I was like, great. And he said, I want you to help me. And I said, no, I don't. I have no idea what's happening. No. And he said, no, it's okay, because like you and my aunt, you know, you'll work together. She'll help you. She knows what she's doing. And it's, this is like social justice, you know, it's fine. So I'm just like, things are just kind of going at such a fast pace. What I want you to kind of pay attention to is that like there are two tracks of mind happening at once. And the other part of my mind is starting to add up the little things that are really weird. But that's like a small part of my mind. And so we go upstairs and this lovely older woman, the aunt, comes and she's sitting next to me and she's sort of like, oh, wow, fun. Okay, we're going to get money back from this like mean older woman. And so I'm kind of horrified. And he said, we're going to give you this money. You're going to play with our money. We go upstairs and there's this table. It's like covered in green, you know, like it looks like an official blackjack table. And then the doorbell rings and you hear this person coming up the stairs and it's this incredibly well-dressed woman with lots of gold and jewelry and fancy dress. And I am just like horrified. I'm a terrible actor. I don't know. I don't know what to do. I just kind of stay silent and try to pretend like I know what I'm doing. And we start playing and sure enough, you know, the little cheats that he taught me, like we're winning money back. So that went on for maybe like half an hour or something. We're winning a lot of money from this woman. And then at one point, we ran out of money to bet. And they said, do you have any cash you can spot us? And what my plan was to take my wallet out, look in it, and say that I didn't have any money. But this is what they did. I brought my wallet out, I looked in it, and four people looked in it with me. I had about $300 total in different currencies, and they said different currencies are fine. So so suddenly I was playing with my own money. Anyway, what happens is on the last play, of course, the dealer, who was my little ally, did not give me the little tip, and we lost everything. And I immediately said, thank you very much. And I got up and I walked out. And they followed me into the room. And they kind of like backed me into this room and closed the door. And they said, our grandmother is dying of cancer and you just took all this money from us and we need to take you to an ATM. And I said, you just cheated me. I just repeated 10 times. You just cheated me. You just cheated me. You just cheated me. And they had me like up against a wall. I mean, it was sort of like, you know, I think looking back on it, I probably could have gotten the money back. But at the time, I didn't know if they were mafia or not. I didn't know what kind of violent kind of methods were at their disposal, if they had a gun or something. And so I just tried to force my way out. And eventually, you know, I was able to force my way out. And I got out on the street. And I was so kind of in shock that it took me about an hour to kind of wander around. I took a combination of taxis and walking. And I just didn't know where I was. And I wasn't really paying attention because I was so in shock. And then I got back to the place where my hotel was, and I was walking along the road, and there was a bar. So there's this nice couple sitting there, and I go in and I talk to them. And I was like, I just need you guys to hear this story. And they were like, sure. They just kind of sat there and listened to it all. They said, you know, there's a sign in our hotel warning people not to walk in these parks or on the waterfront. That people will come up to you, and it's a Filipino gang that comes and tries to cheat money off you. And I said, huh, that's, my hotel didn't have that sign. So I went back to the hotel and I said, this is what happened. And they said, oh yeah, we had a Japanese tourist last week. He got cheated out of $4,000. So they were like, you got off really easy. So that's the story. You know, it's so, you don't think you can be duped that well. And if for me, this kind of may old acquaintance be forgotten. These are acquaintances I really want to forget. But it was a lesson for me in how the brain works and how when you're focused on one thing, on kind of being a guest in a foreign country, you ignore all this other stuff because you don't want to believe it. And that's when you get cheated.
Say it's only a paper moon sailing over a cardboard sea, but it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me. Yes, it's only a canvas sky hanging over a muslin tree, but it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me. Without your love, it's a honky-tonk parade. Without your love.
Welcome back to Porch Stories. Tonight we're listening to stories on the theme, May Old Acquaintance Not Be Forgot. Let's keep listening.
Randy's birthday is November 16th, and our daughter-in-law, who lives with our son in Davenport, has the same birthday. She's a big Bill Cosby fan. And as it turned out, Cosby was playing at the Paramount Theater this last November 16th, and that happens to be another client theater of ours. We have a company that manages theaters and arenas, and it's just reopened after the big flood in 4 years ago, I guess. In 2008, I think the flood occurred. Yeah. And so the Paramount had just reopened, so we were there. So our gift to Jessica was that we would meet in Cedar Rapids. We had a hotel room. We'd go out to dinner and see the show. So we were just getting to the theater when our executive director over there called me and said, "Would you guys like to come back?" And in his words, "hang with Bill," which you never get to do. I mean, the opportunity to actually interact with the celebrities is rare. We said, "Yeah, sure, that'd be great." So we went backstage and we're in a room with Bill and his promoter, David Buxner, and our executive director, Gene, and introduce ourselves. And Bill says, "I've played here before, but something's different." And I said, "Yeah, you were here. In fact, you reopened the theater the last time it was restored about 8 years ago, but you were down on the main floor. Now you're upstairs. We had this big flood, and the whole theater's been remodeled." He said, "That's it." He said, "But now tell me about this flood, because somehow I missed the flood. I didn't know about that." So we told him about 2008 and the flood, and he said, "Was anyone hurt? Was anyone killed?" And they said, "No, it was miraculous, but absolutely nobody was killed in this flood. But this theater was destroyed." And my son, Toby, goes on to tell him about the story that we've all in Iowa heard, that there was a train trestle bridge. And the idea that they had to save the bridge against the force of the floodwater was to park a train on top of the bridge loaded with rocks. And somehow, and I'm no engineer, but somehow apparently if you load the train from the top and put downward pressure on it, that helps strengthen it against the lateral pressure of the water. And then that didn't work. And the train and the trestle, everything turned out to tumble into the water. And Bill says, "Let me get this straight." And he's talking, "Yeah," Toby says, "this is what happened." Well, it's 8:05, and they come and say, "Oh my gosh, you know, Bill, you got to get on stage." And we've just been amazed to be sitting there with him. So we leave, and we barely get to our seats before the lights go down. And the announcer comes out and announces Bill, and Bill takes the stage. And his first words is, "I'm not going to do Noah tonight." And you know, he has a great routine about Noah. Because you folks know all about floods. And a big, big laugh. Big
oh,
laugh.
Yeah.
Then he goes on to do 25 minutes about the train falling into the floodwater.
Oh, my goodness.
So some genius says, "Let's park a train and fill it with rock on the bridge." By the time he said train, that whole audience was ready to say train with him.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And we're sitting there looking up and down the aisle. We can't imagine how he's taken these side comments from us, and in no time at all, it couldn't have been 8 minutes from the time we left him to the time he's on stage, and he just ad-libs this. I mean, it's absolute comic genius. It's all about timing.
Yep.
He has these big gaps where there's nothing being said, and then he zooms in with something, and he mugs to the audience, and it was just tremendous. It was one of those things where you almost had to pinch yourself because, we in fact, we put it in our Christmas letter this year. We had a picture of Bill Cosby with us backstage, and we said, you know, Toby gave him his routine for the Paramount Theater, so that was our big story.
That is genius.
It really is.
Because not only, I mean, he is so good at what he does, but he chose a subject that people could identify with.
And he made it theirs. He made it theirs. Yeah, they were right with him at every step of the way. Yeah.
Thank you. I want to talk to you about a fellow by the name of Noah who built an ark. Now, everybody knows, you ask a question, say, what did Noah do? They say, well, he built an ark. But very few people know about the actual conversation that went on between the Lord and Noah. You see, Noah was a carpenter, and he was in his rec room sawing away, making a few things for the home there.
Vuba, 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 vuba.
Noah.
Vuba, 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 vuba.
Noah. Who is that?
It's the Lord, Noah.
Right. Where are you? What do you want? I've been good.
I want you to build an ark.
Right. What's an ark?
Go out into the woods, collect all of the animals in the world by twos, and make the ark out of cubits, 80 cubits, 40 cubits, 30 cubits.
Right. What's a cubit?
Let's see, a cubit. I used to know what.
Well, don't worry about that. Just go out and collect all those animals by twos, male and female, and put them into the ark. Right. Who is this really? What's going on? How come you want me to do all these weird things?
I'm going to destroy the world.
Right. Am I on candid camera? How are you going to do it?
I'm going to make it rain for 1,000 days and drown them out.
Right. Listen, do this, you'll save water. Let it rain for 40 days and 40 nights and wait for the sewers to back up.
Right.
Thank you for joining us around the table for Porch Stories, where we have just heard stories from your neighbors, Randy Peters, Steve Peters, Bill Cosby, and me, Sarah Hegland. The music you heard today was Home Sweet Home by Bray Brothers, John Denver and George Byrne singing I Wish I Was 18 Again, and Ella Fitzgerald singing It's Only a Paper Moon. Porch Stories is a production of KHOI Radio and is broadcast Wednesday evenings at 9:30 p.m. These stories come from regular events held every month, and everyone is welcome to attend and share your stories. The next event will be held this Friday, June 21st, at KHOI's studio, The Pentorium in Ames, 410 Douglas Avenue. The potluck begins at 6:30 and storytelling at 7 p.m. We look forward to hearing your stories. Thanks to our production crew for this episode, Joe Myers-Walker, Rick Morrison, and me, Sarah Hegland. KHOI is building community through communication. If you'd like to tell a story, please email khoiradio@gmail.com. or phone 515-292-2878. See you next week.